Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Andy Klein. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. Subbing in for Jeff Brown is taking a well-deserved break this February. And we've got a great show lined up today. We've got the Glacier Swim Club folks. They're already here in the studio. Scott Griffiths and a couple of swimmers here. We're going to be talking to them about all the stuff that's going on with the Glacier Swim Club. Later on in the show, we're going to hear from Dorinda Skanes and Richard Carstensen, who have got a show at the City Museum we're going to be talking about. Jump Society folks in after that. Lou Logan, Pat Reyes, Aaron Suring talking about the Jump Film Fest that's premiering tonight. The Winter 2012 Fest is premiering tonight. And then Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up will be in here talking about a bunch of stuff happening, including a show concentrating on the work of Buddy Tabor that'll be happening on KRNN and the Glacial Erratics. That's all coming up in just a minute. First, here's National Native News from National Native News Radio.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The federal government is being sued by a coalition of tribes and environmental groups over the Navy's expanded use of sonar off the West Coast. As Jacob Resnick reports, there's concern about impacts on marine life.
2 years ago, the National Marine Fisheries Service authorized the U.S. Navy to expand its use of sonar in an area of the Pacific roughly the size of the state of California. The war games could stretch from the Canadian border down to Mendocino County in Northern California. Fisheries officials acknowledged sonar disrupts marine life, especially whales, dolphins, and seals, but found the Navy's needs outweighed biological concern. But a federal lawsuit filed by environmentalists and tribes calls on the National Fisheries Service to force the Navy to refrain from using sonar in biologically sensitive areas. Miyoko Sakashita, a staff attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity, says the Navy won't be taking adequate precautions.
What the Navy is talking about here are doing training exercises all along the coast of Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. So when you're talking about Navy sonar exercises in these areas, it's a direct invasion of these important habitat areas.
The Intertribal Sinkione Wilderness Council, a federation of 10 tribes in Northern California, has also joined the lawsuit because of fears of disruptions to subsistence and ceremonial activities. The council's executive director, Hawk Rosales, says the federal government lacks an apparent appreciation of what's at stake.
Our responsibility as humans is to protect the Mother Earth and the ocean, and all the relatives that we have as Native people, because that is our duty. And so we hope that the government can begin to understand that a little bit better, that responsibility of ours is, unfortunately having to translate into this lawsuit, but we hope that the result can be a friendly solution that will protect the priceless heritage that we all have in the ocean.
The lawsuit notes similar sonar exercises have harmed whales. One such incident in 2004 caused as many as 200 melon-headed whales to beach themselves in Hawaii's Hanalei Bay, and there are fears it could happen again. There has been no comment from the Navy, though in its permit application it had pledged not to use sonar in areas where whales and other marine mammals had been sighted. The lawsuit says these safeguards are inadequate. A federal judge is expected to rule later this year. For National Native News, I'm Jacob Resnick in Northern California.
The American Indian Studies program at the University of Wyoming has contracted an architect to develop a proposed American Indian Center at UW. Tristan Autone reports.
John Paul Jones has worked as lead consultant for the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian, as well as numerous other cultural centers, museums, and parks. Judith Antel is the director of the American Indian Studies program at UW. She says contracting Jones is only the first step in establishing a center on campus.
While I think the university is very interested in an American Indian Center, and we've been talking about it for some time now, we have no firm commitment as to when this center will be built, if ever, where it will be located, how the funds to support the center will be acquired. All of those major issues have yet to be considered.
Antel says a series of community meetings will be held over the coming months. If final proposals are written, the center would have to be approved by the legislature before being built. Formal conversations and data will also be collected over the coming year. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
During this week in 2011, thousands of Canadians became eligible to receive Indian status after a change in legislation. Descendants denied status because their grandmothers married non-Indians became eligible. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
National Native News is made possible with support from Days In of Anchorage. Wake up with the sun on the web at daysinalaska.com. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick, Click, Give when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, sitting in for Jeff Brown, and we're talking to folks from the Glacier Swim Club here in just a second. Just want to let you know there's a strong wind warning in effect right now. Strong winds from this evening through Friday morning are predicted, with a lot of rain and a lot of wind. Wind gusts 35 miles an hour, getting up to 40 miles an hour, 45 miles an hour on Friday. Real gusty winds happening out there. It was a wild night last night, too, man, especially downtown. Really crazy out there. Scott Griffiths, how you doing? Here from the Glacier Swim Club.
I'm good.
Good to have you here in the studio. Really appreciate you coming in. And you've brought a couple of swimmers with you, Sophia and Jordan. Thanks, you guys, for coming in. You guys are both 8th graders, and you're homeschooled. And you're from Floyd Dryden.
Yep.
Terrific. So, Scott, tell me a little bit about what's going on with Glacier Swim Club. I know you've got the Aqualapse happening, so see all these kids walking around, hitting people up to sponsor them for doing laps. What's going on with that?
That's right. We're kicking off our Aqualapse here soon, and it's our biggest fundraiser of the year. We couldn't do it without the support of Juno and all the people that are willing to contribute for those kids to get in there and swim extra laps. These two guys beside me, I think they're going to swim 250 laps this year.
What? Mm-hmm. Laps, full laps, is that back and forth or just one
250 down? Lengths, I'm sorry.
125
lengths. Laps. Yeah.
125 laps. Okay. How many miles is that?
It would add
like
up
27
to be
miles, right?
About 3 miles.
Oh,
yeah.
3 miles. Okay. Less than 27. What's the English Channel? I don't even know how long that is.
10, I think.
Is
10
it?
Miles, something like that.
Is that
yeah.
right? It's only 10 miles. You'd think it'd be so much worse.
I think that's right. Maybe it's longer. I'm not sure.
Well, so tell me. So what's the typical thing, Jordan? When you go up to someone, you say Aqualapse. Do they want to give you $5, or what do they usually do? How can they give to you? Have you done it much before?
I haven't done it yet.
You haven't done it yet. So what are you hoping for? How much total are you hoping to raise, you personally? Do you have a goal?
I don't know.
$500?
Sure,
$500. How about you? Do you have a goal?
About 500 or more.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, have you done it before?
Yeah, I have.
And how much did you raise last time?
I think I raised about 600 last year.
Wow, that's terrific. Man, that's a lot of money. How do people, when you've done it before, do they like to give, like, is that how it's done? Like, you give 25 cents a lap or a dollar a lap? Is
yeah,
that how
they
it's
can
done?
Either do it that way, or they can just give you a total amount.
And you just say, great, I'll go do
yeah.
it. Yeah, right. Now, what happens? So you swim 250 lengths.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens if you don't make it?
Everybody makes it.
Everyone yeah. makes it.
We give them plenty of chances.
You guys are trained. You'll make it. You're in good shape. Absolutely.
We give them plenty of time. If they don't finish, we offer a makeup. So
okay.
Sooner or later, they get it in.
Cool.
They made a commitment. They'll do it.
Great.
One more thing, too. For every pledge we get, our swimmers will donate 5 minutes towards the Juno cleanup. We'll go out and clean the streets, and we add up our time to according to how many pledges we get, and we contribute back in any way we can.
Great. Is there a section of highway that you guys sponsor, or you just kind of go out and clean up all around?
Well, in the past, when we've had one pool, we've stuck around downtown and gone out from there. But now that we have two pools, we'll probably be doing a little bit more in the valley too.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that. Now, we've got this beautiful new facility out in the valley. How has that changed the Glacier Swim Club? I'm sure it's changed it tremendously.
It has, and it's a growing process too. As we grow into two pools, we're getting a lot of new swimmers out in the valley. Of course, we can only take so many at a time. That pool has been awesome. I mean, it really has. We've already had two championship meets there. We're looking to try to bring high school states down here one year. It's probably I would say, the best pool in the state right now.
Wow.
And for a competition point. And then the fun part of it, it's just every day you hear kids laughing and screaming. It's
now, when you say the best pool from a competition, are people hitting records there? I mean, is it considered a really fast pool, a little wake and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you're not really sure until you have your first competition. And we hosted high school regionals at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center this year, and yeah, there were, I don't know, maybe a dozen or so records broken. So it's,
wow,
it definitely qualifies as a fast pool.
How about you guys? Do you feel the difference when you're in that pool? Do you feel faster?
It feels
really.
Yeah.
And what do you swim? What are your competitions that you swim in? Your strokes and all that stuff.
Probably freestyle and backstroke.
Okay, and so you have you done your fastest times in that pool and all that kind of thing?
Or? Yeah, some of them.
Really,
yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. How about you? You can you tell the difference when you're swimming there?
A little. I mostly do distance, butterfly, and freestyle.
Okay, yeah. So distance, the difference in doing distance is a little bit less with the kind of speeds and stuff. It's more about your personal stamina and that kind of thing, right? Yeah. Very cool. Well, and you said that it's, even though we've got two pools, what I've heard from like parents who, my kid's a little older now, but from my from parents that I know, there's still a waiting list, right? It's still because the demand has increased with the pools almost, right?
Yeah, it has. And, you know, at the beginner level, we can only take so many at once. So when the kids are coming into the program, we're kind of taking them as we can. And then as we filter them in, we expect to grow for another year or two at least as we expand into these pools. But it's nice to see our downtown pool is just as busy as it's been, you know. So it's nice to see everybody not leave there, you know.
Right,
it's still
right.
A favorite to a lot of people, so.
And I know later this month the Great Alaska Open is happening in Anchorage, right? You guys are involved in that.
What's
going to happen there?
We've got a handful of kids going up there in a couple weeks. That's the state senior championship meet. And then the following week is actually the age group championships here in Juneau.
Oh,
that's
okay.
For 14 and youngers. These guys will be there. Last year, swimming there.
Last.
So that'll be a big meet, too.
Right, right. Cool. So are you at the point, since it's your second to last year, you're kind of at that point now where you're really, you're sort of developed and competing at the highest level of that meet, right?
Next year, I'll be the oldest in my age group. So.
Oh, cool. So that means a little bit of an advantage in a way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you should have the years in. Okay, we're looking for big things for you, especially next year. All right. Keep that in mind. Sophia, remember that name. Going to come in big. Floyd Dryden, represent. And Jordan, what are your specific things that you kind of feel like are your strongest events?
1650 and 1000 freestyle and the 200 butterfly.
And what is it about distance that you like?
I don't know. I've just always done better at distance than sprinting.
It seems like in some ways distance, especially swimming and same with running, like it's a little lonely, isn't it? I mean, you're out there for a long time just with your own thoughts and trying to maintain form and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is it about that do you think that gets to you better, more so than just the...
I don't know. I just really like swimming for a long time and keeping the same pace and getting faster.
That's the challenge to you, is that sort of maintaining your form as much
mm-hmm.
as possible and
yeah.
keeping pace. That's very cool. Well, thanks so much to you guys. I really appreciate it, Jordan and Sophia, and, of course, Scott Griffiths from the Glacier Swim Club. Thanks so much. Keep swimming. Keep getting wet every morning. You love the hours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What time do you get up in the morning?
Saturday mornings, we have to be at the pool by 6 o'clock.
It's insane. It's just not.
You can come join us
you
anytime.
Do it. Yeah, will do. I'll be there. I'll bring a hot coffee. Okay, you guys, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein in with you today. And now in the studio with me is Alicia Jones from the Juno Douglas City Museum. How you doing?
Good.
And with us, with you, is Richard Carstensen. Richard, thanks so much for coming in. You can
Hi,
pull
Andy.
That mic right over to you there. There you go. All right. And great to have you guys in. And talk to me a little bit about what's happening at the City Museum. A couple of different shows kind of simultaneously happening. So tell me what
yes.
you guys have going on.
We have a very busy weekend. Tomorrow evening on First Friday, we'll have Solitude in Place. It's a solo artist exhibit with artwork from Dorinda Skanes. And she's actually up there right now installing her show.
Okay.
So she wasn't able to come down. But
hammering away.
She gave me some notes to share with everyone about her show. And we will also have, we're continuing these kind of showcases in the museum gift shop area. And so they're kind of a smaller scale, and items are available for purchase that, you can kind of purchase it that evening. And unlike a solo artist exhibit, you don't have to wait a month to get the
right.
pieces, so you can
okay,
just take
cool.
it with you. And we'll have in the gift shop, it's not just another button. It's beaded pins by Ella Johnson Bentley, who's known as Juno's bead sculptress. So that's happening tomorrow evening from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. And then on Saturday, we'll have
Turn
Richard
to this
Carstensen.
Man here.
Yes.
Richard Carstensen. And Richard, tell me a little bit about your exhibit is titled Natural and Cultural History of Juno's Dairy District. So
yeah.
tell me a little bit. That's a fascinating thing to me. I've walked many hikes out in the area, and I've seen you out there probably many times out in that area. Tell me a little bit about what you describe as the Dairy District.
Well, first of all, that's just the, what
just
I decided to
sure.
call it. I'm not sure that's an official name that anybody uses, but
it is
it's
now. It's
basically,
been on the radio. It's
all
not
right.
official. That's it.
Good. It'll be on the
it's
maps.
It's done. It's done.
Well, it extends from the Mendenhall wetlands at the mouth of Mendenhall River and over into Lemon Creek Valley as well. And if you plot the locations of the early homesteads, which I've been able to do by going on a BLM website and downloading the early surveys that show every cabin and barn and silo, it pretty much defines the most generous and productive part of the Juno or the CBJ.
Mm-hmm.
It's where plants grow the fastest and are the least toxic and where all the herbivores want to go, whether they're wild or domestic.
Sort of meadowlands kind
yeah.
of areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
So it would be the salt marsh, particularly the Lingby Sedge Belt part of the salt marsh down in the tidal zone
and
then up into the what I call the uplift meadow, which is formerly tidal but raised above that by glacial rebound, and the forest hasn't got there yet. So you got this beautiful transitional area.
And is that like what areas? Is that Sunny Point or is that in the
both
just
sides
kind
of Sunny Point?
Both
yeah.
sides, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but you're just when you say those regions, you're describing regions that are stretch that whole length of
yeah.
the Gassineau.
Yeah.
Channel, but the closer into the Gassineau Channel, the more they're the rebound and that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And out beyond about mean high water, beyond where anybody would have claimed a homestead, I'm referring to that as the commons, and all the cattle ranged all the way out as far as the edge of the mudflat because the plant that was most attractive to them was this thing called Lingby sedge that most people, in fact, the old farmers call it salt grass, but it's really a sedge, which is slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
It's more palatable, less fibrous, and it's, I think it's, the more I look at it, the most important plant to herbivores, seed eaters, and in some cases even rearing fish. It's just
really?
An incredibly important plant.
Huh.
And when humans move into a place like the Dairy District, we, of course, boot out all of the competitors like the brown bears and the wolves and take over. But one of the intriguing things to me in thinking about the long-term legacy of the dairy period is when you go out the road and see places that are reverted to genuine wildlands, they're doing pretty good. So there may be a few invasive species that are legacies of that period, but none of the ones that people are most on the lookout for that are really worrisome.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, I think, oddly, the dairy presence has resulted in even better habitat than you would have had otherwise.
Really interesting. How so?
Well, for example, in an uplift meadow, in a natural situation, alder and willow are pretty rare. But if you put a bunch of horses and cattle out there and you get erosion along stream banks and stuff, that's an opportunity for those little shrubs and small trees like alder to seed in. And 50 years later, those are an important part of the structural diversity of these dairy legacy uplift meadows.
Now, are there areas in Southeast and in the Juneau area that still have this kind of thing going on? I'm thinking about Echo Ranch kind of, right?
Exactly.
There's some horses out there.
Yeah. Echo Ranch and behind the Saga Lodge out in Amalgam Meadows. Those are two places where you now have spectacular wildlife habitat that were intensively grazed.
Right.
In the case of Echo Ranch, still are.
Still are, right. And so what do you see that's happening there? Is Echo Ranch sort of a little bit of a window into the past for what's...
Definitely.
Yeah.
And that's all horses. And I don't even know. Maybe somebody can tell me if there were ever cattle out there. And I'm curious what's the difference in dietary needs and environmental effect of horses versus cattle. I haven't solved that one yet.
Right.
I should admit that I am certainly no expert on the dairy era. I got here in 77, and the dairy period was long over.
Well, we don't expect you to have been from the dairy era. I mean, yeah.
Right. But I'm hearing from Alicia that we get a good sort of audience of Juneau, longtime Juneau folks who know the history. So I'm kind of, for me, this is kind of an opportunity to put up some pictures and talk about them and see what people have to tell me about what's going on.
Tell me a little bit about what about Richard's work attracted the City Museum, and also just a little bit more about the other exhibit that's happening. How did you get involved with, you know, like, okay, Richard, we all know him as a really interesting artist, and especially a natural artist, and the books, I know of the books that especially you've done, like with Robert Armstrong, and these really wonderful drawings that you do, but how did that kind of connection happen to the City Museum?
We actually had one of our volunteers, Mike Blackwell, approached me inviting Richard to be a presenter for our monthly coffee and collection series. And we're always looking for, you know, different topics relating to Juneau's history, art, culture. And we've gotten a lot of requests from those longtime Juneauites that come just about every month to do a different area, because a lot of times it focuses on either personalities in the downtown area or about Treadwell. And so they really wanted to hear more about the history kind of out the road a little bit. And so this seemed like a perfect opportunity to do that. And so I contacted Richard about...
It seems so great. To me, it's so much a part of the mission of what happens with the City Museum, in that you're going to have this beautiful artwork, which is a great part of being a museum, but it's linked to the story of Juneau. And then what I love, too, is what you just said. And further, you're planning on learning more at the actual exhibit and making more connections and being able to maybe do further research and that kind of thing, continue your work because of the exhibit. That's a pretty unique opportunity, I think, for an artist. Yeah.
We have to make sure to leave enough time for interaction.
That's right. That's right. So tell me a little bit about some of the actual pieces that people will see when they go.
Oh, well, mine is not an exhibit. It's strictly a presentation.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I'm happy to share any of these images and maps. And, in fact, I have a pre-recorded version of it I can leave with the City Museum anybody
can use. Part of your presentation, though, will be showing some of the research you've done, but not your specific work, but more just historical stuff that you've found. I see.
But the subtitle of my talk is The Past in Pictures. I'm a really visually oriented person.
I see.
And that's my main window into this, is scrutinizing these old historical photos, if possible getting out and retaking them and exactly overlaying the repeat photo so you can look at every element of the scene, see how it's changed since then. In terms of natural succession, but also human development patterns.
Yeah, I would think that digital photography has really assisted you in that area. Some of the tools you can use to match up perspectives and those kinds of things have really improved.
For one thing, you can upload the original historical photo into your camera, take it out in the field with a tripod, and toggle it back and forth between the photo and, you know, viewing it through the viewfinder until you get all four corners exactly in the right place, then you don't have to rely so much on Photoshop.
Fascinating. I never knew how that was done. There's a couple of things I've seen. There's a really fun website out there where a guy goes to famous movies, and he goes and he finds the locations, and he finds the movie angle, and then he does the exact same photo and shows, like, the Blues Brothers or something, and here's Chicago, and here's this corner that they went around. And I was wondering, how does he do that? How does he get that exact shot? And I think that must be it. I'm sure he just downloaded it to his camera. Yeah,
probably.
Very good. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit more about the other artists' solo exhibit and what's happening there and what people can expect to see when they go see that.
Sure. So our new solo artist exhibit is Dorinda Skanes, and she will have artwork up in our temporary gallery. And it's what she told me that she wanted to share with everyone that none of the paintings have snow in it. And they're bright colors.
Or wind.
It's gorgeous, yes, or wind. And so there's just a lot of bright colors. And what she does, it's, speaking of digitally working with images, she creates a traditional painting or uses a traditional, like, photograph or collage, and then she alters it digitally. And it's basically her perceptions and recollections of Southeast Alaska landscapes. So there'll be different areas throughout Southeast that'll be represented in her artwork. And they are stunning color-wise. So it's definitely a good time of year to have her showing at the museum.
Terrific. That's happening at the City Museum. This is all happening. Everything we've talked about, it's all happening this weekend.
Yes.
That's a lot on your plate.
It is.
Are you sure about this? Is this all going to happen?
Yes.
It's going to be okay. It's all happening at the City Museum. Maybe just a rundown one more time of the times and the exhibits that are going on.
Absolutely. So tomorrow evening, Friday from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m., we have Solitude in Place. Artwork by Dorinda Skanes will open, as well as Not Just Another Button, Beaded Pins by Ella Johnson Bentley in the museum gift shop area. And then on Saturday at 10:30, we'll have our monthly coffee and collections presentation with Richard Carstensen, and it's the Natural and Cultural History of Juneau's Dairy District, The Past in Pictures.
Fantastic. All happening at the City Museum. That's the City Museum, this museum with the beautiful totem in front of it right by the Capitol building. Go check it out. And I just encourage people so much to just go to the City Museum. There's so many people I've talked to who have said, I've never been in that building. It's just the weirdest thing. And then I just encourage you so much to go. Or if you just haven't been in a while, go. It's a wonderful place. Makes you connected to the community. And it's just a place to see beautiful, amazing things from our past and from our present as well.
And we do have a free winter admission. This month is sponsored in memory of Harold O. Fossum. So there's no excuse not to stop by the museum.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful way to remember someone. Thanks so much, Alicia Jones, Richard Carstensen. Thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate your work on it, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Andy. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Coming up, we got the Jump Society folks coming in here. Talk about Jump Society Film Fest that's going to be premiering tonight at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. It'll be playing all this weekend. Also, Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council will be in here to talk about what's happening in the week in arts, in Arts Up. One fun thing that's going to be happening this weekend is a couple of shows specifically to honor Buddy Tabor, who is having some medical issues right now. And the Glacial Erratics will be playing a show for Buddy Tabor at 4 o'clock on Saturday. And that's going to be happening at the Resurrection Lutheran Church. It's going to be happening at 7 p.m. It's $15 at the door, and all the proceeds for that go towards the medical treatment for Buddy. Also, a really fun thing and a great thing that's going to be on KRNN is going to be hosted by Chris Trostel, a tribute to Buddy Tabor. People will be calling in if you're a friend or have ever been affected by Buddy's great musical work. You'll be asked to please call in, share your memories, and share your thoughts, and be playing a lot of Buddy's music and talking to a lot of Buddy's friends. It should be a great weekend of remembrance of someone who's been a wonderful influence in the music and culture of Juno. We're going to get to a second half of Juno Afternoon in just a moment.
Tune in to KRNN 102.7 on Saturday at noon for a special Mudlark sampler dedicated to Buddy Tabor. As many of you know, Buddy was diagnosed with cancer in late 2011. Host Chris Trostel will be celebrating his music, and he'll be listening in from home. This is a great opportunity for you to share your fun memories. You can call in during the program or send us a note to be read on your behalf from our contact page at krnn.org or our Facebook page. Again, that's this Saturday at noon on KRNN at 102.7, a radio special that celebrates Buddy Tabor.
Strong winds are advised for this evening through Friday morning. Today is going to be rain for the rest of the day with highs around 41 degrees. Temperatures falling here in the afternoon. Southeast winds strong, 15 to 20 miles an hour with gusts up to 35 miles an hour, diminishing to the east, 10 miles an hour here in this afternoon. Tonight, rain, heavy at times in the evening. Snow level around 1,200 feet, lows around 35 degrees. And 25-mile-an-hour wind gusts to around 40 miles an hour in the late evening. Just handed a bulletin from Casey Kelly in the newsroom that the State Department of Transportation road crews have cleared the snow from the avalanche that occurred overnight off of Mount Roberts. So both lanes of Thane Road are now open to traffic, and they conducted avalanche control with artillery rounds fired from across the channel before allowing equipment and workers into the avalanche zone. But once again, DOT is saying that they've cleared the snow now from the avalanche that happened overnight off of Mount Roberts that was closing off Thane Road, and now both lanes of Thane Road are open to traffic. Right now, we're going to go to Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 2nd of February, 2012. It's the birthday of James Joyce, born in Dublin, 1882, who said, "The demand that I make of my reader is that he should devote his whole life to reading my works." James Joyce, who wrote Ulysses, 1922, Finnegan's Wake, 1939, Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man, 1916, and his short story collection Dubliners in 1914. He was educated by Jesuits, first visited a prostitute at the age of 14, dropped out of medical school, wanted to be an opera star, and then he met and fell in love with a hotel maid from Galway named Nora Barnacle when he was 22, and he set the action of his book Ulysses on the day he had his first date with her, June 16, 1904, now commemorated all over the world each year as Bloom's Day, after the protagonist of Ulysses, Leopold Bloom. He convinced Nora to leave Ireland with him and elope to Europe, where he did all his best work, and where they were forever impoverished, constantly relying on his brother Stanislaus for money. They had a son, Giorgio, and after that they slept head to foot and attempted birth control. But then Nora became pregnant with Lucia about a year later. James Joyce was a doting father, liked to spoil his kids, never punished either one of them, told an interviewer, "Children must be educated by love, not punishment." Nora was apathetic towards her husband's writing. Joyce worked at night. He laughed so loud at his own words sometimes she'd get up and tell him to stop writing and stop laughing so she could get some sleep. Shortly after Ulysses was published, which, by the way, Joyce pronounced Ulysses, Nora remarked to a fan of his, "I've always told him he should give up writing and take up singing." James Joyce was afraid of thunder and lightning. He'd go hide under the bed whenever it struck. And he was afraid of dogs. He walked around town with rocks in his pockets so he could throw them at any dogs who came near him. He loved music and literature, but he had no patience for art, for painting. On his desk, he had a tiny bronze statue of a woman lying back in a chair with a cat draped over her shoulders, which all of his friends told him was ugly, but he kept it on his desk anyway. One of his friends said he had no taste, only genius. He liked to drink and he liked to dance, and his daughter-in-law said that liquor went to his feet, not his head. He usually sat with his legs crossed, with the toe of one crossed again under the calf of the other. He was kind and generous to strangers. He would invite waiters to come sit down at his table. His friend Sylvia Beach said that Joyce treated people invariably as his equals, whether they were writers, children, waiters, princesses, or charladies. If he arrived in a taxi, he wouldn't get out until the driver had finished what he was saying. And Joyce himself fascinated everybody. Nobody could resist his charm. James Joyce, who said, "The artist, like the god of the creation, remains within or behind or beyond or above his handiwork, invisible, refined, out of existence, indifferent, paring his fingernails." Here's a poem for today by John Stone, entitled "Autopsy in the Form of an Elegy." In the chest, in the heart, was the vessel, was the pulse, was the art, was the love, was the clot, small and slow, and the scar that could not know the rest of you was very nearly perfect. Autopsy in the Form of an Elegy by John Stone, from Music from Apartment 8, published by Louisiana State University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Arts Up on K2 is supported in part by the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Juno Afternoon. In the studio with me right now, Lou Logan.
How's it going, man?
From the Jump Film Society. How are you?
I'm doing good.
We just ran over here. I saw you running down the street. Get in here.
You had to throw on a little...
Put on the Garrison Keillor. I had to throw it over to Garrison.
Yeah, one of his sentences will allow me to run over here.
Yes. Very good. Well, we got the Jump Society Film Fest coming up. The Winter Showcase is happening tonight. The premiere is tonight at the Gold Town Nickelodeon.
Tonight at 7 p.m. at Gold Town.
And then what are the other show times that people might be able to catch it?
If you don't come tonight, you can come tomorrow, Friday, 7 and 9 p.m. And then Saturday, same thing. One showing at 7, one at 9.
And for people out at UAS, February 10th, there's going to be a showing as well.
That's right. It's part of their light.
Sound in Motion program. Yes. It's going to be
Do your research, Lou, before you come here.
Lou. Tell me a little bit about some of the videos. You got some of the Usual Suspects and then some new folks.
Yeah, Usual Suspects. We have stuff from Greg Chaney and his son Connor. Clint Farr has a little short in there.
Fun.
Pat Race, of course.
Yes.
And some newcomers. A couple K2 and KXLL people. Jesse Herman's got a... she's got a GoPro camera. And
she does. She has one of those helmet-mounted GoPros.
Yeah, and she submitted something, and...
She did?
Kelly Birkinshaw. She has a movie about a whale necropsy.
She does?
Yeah.
It's
a time-lapse of them dissecting a whale.
Oh, because there's a different thing that Kelly has. She's got two things, right. And one is... The other thing that she has is a trip that she took with a bunch of friends out to Point Adolphus in a time-lapse kind of cool...
I think it was a kayak trip.
Yep, it was. So that's another thing from Kelly. So two from Kelly.
I haven't
awesome.
Seen all of these movies yet, so...
Yeah, I happened to see that one because Kelly works here and she showed that to me. And we got to see that at a staff meeting as well.
Yeah, so good mix.
Inside
about,
track on that.
I'd say an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and a half. And each show is the same. So if you miss 7 p.m., just come at 9
yes.
tomorrow.
Sounds good. And how about, you said about an hour and a half of a show, and what is sort of the criteria? Maybe people haven't gotten into this one, but they're thinking about doing a film next time. What's some of the criteria you look for out of people that when they want to submit?
The first criteria is to make a movie. I think that's the hardest part.
You ran into trouble there on that one.
Well,
this time around, you were going to do a movie. I was supposed to be in
this. To our listeners, yes, I recorded Andy here at his beardiest
seen him. I was so beardy.
But his scene didn't make the cut because I didn't get off my...
The best parts are on the cutting room floor.
That's all right.
That's what you always hear.
They're called sweepings.
Yes. I'm into sweepings.
So I'll have a couple scenes of our friend Jamie with his puppet. But if people, we want submissions, we want people to submit, and it could be about anything. We hardly ever cut things. Sometimes we do if people submit something really long or give us several movies. But 10 minutes or less, we like the shorter ones, of course.
Yeah.
Go to jumpsociety.org for more information.
Yeah. And sometimes what happens during the showing of these things, you might say, like in the second half, hey, in the second half, if you have any kids, you might want to not, you know, this
That's
is
right.
the,
That's
you
a good
know.
Reminder because sometimes I forget. The second half is where we put the stuff that...
might not be appropriate for all ages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we also make Andy skip the first half for the children's sake.
Yes.
Those I'm not comments.
In a strange way, I'm not allowed to go during the first half. That's right.
I'm kidding.
Well, that's it. It's happening once again. It's premiering tonight. It's the Jump Film Festival. So, and how do people get tickets? And tell me a little bit about all that stuff. I mean,
well, it seats about
it's free. So.
Yeah, it's free. I think there's about 90 seats, including a couple of couches and chairs in the back. So you got to get early to get those. But you can go to Lucid Reverie. Our office is in the same building as Gold Town Nickelodeon and Heritage Coffee. And you walk through Heritage or go through the Gold Town side and knock on our door and hopefully there's someone there. Yeah. And we'll give you tickets. They're free. Or just show up at the show and 5 minutes before it starts, we'll let the stragglers in.
But every now and then, the show, I mean, not even every now and then, often there's, you know, it's sold out, basically, even though the tickets are free.
The tickets are free, but we give tickets so people can basically have a seat.
Right. So,
and then we let people in after that, and they can try to find a seat.
Yeah. So stop by tonight if you want to go see this. It starts at 7. Tomorrow night, 7 and 9. Saturday, 7 and 9. And then as part of the Sound and Motion series out at UAS, if you're out there at UAS, it's happening on February 10th. Lou Logan from the Jump Film Society, thanks so much for coming by, man.
Thanks, Andy.
Appreciate it. All right. Coming up next, Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney.
Every house and on every street, And if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, their names are written in concrete. Don't step on Greta Garbo as you walk down the boulevard. She looks so weak and fragile, that's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess, and they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom, because she wanted to be alone. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood. And some who suffered in vain. Rudolph Valentino.
Ah, the Kinks with Cellular Heroes there, talking all about movies from the Jump Film Fest, and now to talk all about the rest of the artistic things that are happening in town. Nancy DeCherney, how you doing?
I'm well. How about yourself?
Good. Let's begin. Arts Up. Boom! Here we go.
All right. Well,
big start.
It's a big week because it's First Friday week, of course.
Yes.
Let's see.
So, I forgot about that somehow, but you're right. Tomorrow's First Friday. Big
Indeed.
Day tomorrow. What is going on with me? I'm too busy.
I don't know.
I'm too busy.
But it's a good thing I'm here to
yes,
remind
thank you.
You. Okay. Well, this evening at 6:30, you can go to the Slow Foods Quarterly Potluck and have the olive oil tasting out at Pavitt's. Just bring something to share and then enjoy the olive oil tasting.
Nice. I love olive oil.
Yeah. And, you know, anyway.
That's happening tonight?
That's happening tonight, and it's also happening tomorrow. And you were just talking about the Jump Film Festival, so we don't have to talk about that.
Yes. Jump Film Festival starts tonight. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Keep going. Next.
Next. Statewide Library Archives and Museum Project, the SLAM Project. You can get an update about what's happening with that, see the designs and all that sort of stuff tonight at 7 o'clock over at the Alaska State Museum.
Cool.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, so Animals Out of Paper. You
uh-huh.
You have this weekend and you have next weekend.
It's
a short run. And I got to see this last weekend, and it's wonderful. It's laughing, it's touching, it's many things, so it's worth doing.
I worked on this. I did the
yes,
sound design on this.
You did do the sound. You did the soundtrack.
I did the soundtrack and the sound design and all that. I did the knocks yes. on the door and the buzzers and the intercoms and all those things that had to happen.
Yeah, see, it's all like magic.
It was, yeah. And I have to say, because of that, you see the thing a dozen times.
Can you quote some of it?
And I can quote some of it, maybe. But basically, I thought the writing of this play is really phenomenal. I mean, it is really an interesting play.
It is witty. And I have to say, all three actors did a great job.
Fantastic.
Don't miss that. That starts I think tonight is a pay-as-you-can night. So Thursday
yes.
night, 7:30, out at Perseverance.
And the sound design is genius.
Genius. And yeah. they have the soundtrack listing there. Yes. So in case you need that for future reference, you can pick it up.
Your husband did not need it, but other people might want it. I'm just saying.
We already have the Dean Martin thing.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Back to First Friday. It starts off early in the day at 2 p.m. with Aunt Claudia's Doll Museum, which is open. It's upstairs from – you go in to buy cuts online. And it's open from 2 till 7 on Friday, and then it's open noon until 4 on Saturday.
I like this trend of starting it earlier. Let's get First Friday going.
On Thursday.
As early as possible. Wine and cheese and just artwork and the whole
everything.
Deal. Let's
yeah.
go. Okay.
Okay. And then at 4 o'clock, the State Museum is having its two new shows are opening this week on this First Friday. They are going to be fabulous. I have seen some of Sandy Gillespie's work up in Anchorage. It's wonderful. Her exhibit is called Open Book. She takes literature and combines it with art. Emily Dickinson. I mean, there's just it's very amazing. And also they have an exhibit called Jive Ho, which is about Bristol Bay's sailing fleet.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and
wow.
Then at 7 o'clock will be a presentation about the Bristol Bay Fisheries by John Branson and John Clark. So you start out over at, you know, first you go to the Dahl Museum, and then you go over to the State Museum, and then you circle around and come back at 7 o'clock.
I would think at the Dahl Museum, naturally you're having tea, little tea and biscuits with the little dollies. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. Well, then, we'll ask Mary Ellen Frank about that. And her studio is open.
I think I've revealed
open.
A little too much. Okay, so then the State Museum. Then okay, what's happening at the Jack?
You come over to the Jack and get your little list of things to do. We have Boundaries by M.K. McNaughton and Tasha Whalen. And M.K. is over there right now building a nest. And, yeah, there's pictures.
If it was anyone else, I would question it, but I can imagine that happening.
It's
yes.
happening over there right now. It's going to be a really fascinating exhibit. So, and then from, the City Museum has Solitude in Place, which is Dorinda Skane. She's a landscape artist. And also Not Just Another Button, things by a bead worker,
yes.
Ella Bentley, will be in the gift shop. The City Museum is free admission all month.
Right, we heard this,
thanks to
yes.
Harold Fossum.
Which is a wonderful way to remember someone, and that's mm-hmm. a really nice thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
and we talked to Richard Carstensen, too, who's also doing a presentation at the City Museum this weekend.
On Saturday, yeah.
We have covered that fully,
okay.
yes.
All right.
Let's keep going.
If you didn't hear it before, you should have to go back and listen
that's right.
before. Okay.
yeah.
Windows and Doors with Miguel Pratt at the Canvas as you walk down the hill. A Little of This and A Little of That, Crystal Hagel, is at Alaska Litho, the old Copy Express
yes.
place on Seward Street. Victoria Brown, her paintings will be at the Silver Bow Back Room. Go to the Rookery, Jason Soza's photography. The exhibit is called Colors, Patterns, and the Lack Thereof. Seek Chic Charms, Stacy Gullifson's fabulous jewelry is featured at Shoefly. And everybody wants to stop at Shoefly anyway, as long as you're out and about, right?
I've been dragged there before, yeah.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Then Annie Kales has Jewelry by Colleen Goldrich and Leah Sturgis. I would point out that this is pre-Valentine's. This is an opportunity.
This is an opportunity
yes,
here to be a knight in shining armor.
Yes.
Yes.
yes. You could win.
yes. There's something at stake this first Friday.
yeah. So take notes. And anyway, then across there's a new exhibit, a new gallery opening, the Grind Coffee, which is on Front
right.
Street. They're going to have photography with Jessica Fuller
oh, cool.
and Jeremy Lavender. And I believe there's live music there, and I didn't catch who it is. The Alaska Brewing Depot is open. They're doing beer and chocolates. Their truffles are made with smoked porter and stout and whatnot. So stop in now. Now, they're open until late. They're mm-hmm. open a little later. So you stop in there. The Juno Artist Gallery, which is in the Senate building, is just featuring Valentine's. All the artists, I guess, are doing Valentine sorts
oh,
things.
Oh, cool.
And in the same building, Figment, Alana Balam-Schwan's Fox and the Chicken Coop exhibit is running, and she'll be open.
And Figment's a really wonderful new gallery that's
it
out there.
Is.
Yeah,
it is. Very
really,
quirky
if you haven't
and
been
fun.
There yet, it's right by the elevator there towards the back of the Senate building.
Yeah.
But really beautiful.
Check it out. She's doing a great job
yeah.
there. You go on up the hill to For the Love of Art. Juliana Humphreys is at the Baranoff in the Franklin Street Gallery, and the Baranoff is having a wine tasting as well.
Okay.
The Odom Company is being featured. And then Bees, Bakery and Bistro, the hot pink place.
Yes.
Yes.
I love that place.
I liked yeah, pink is great, you
yes.
know. She is featuring ceramics by James Volkers. So that kind of gives you a good circle
wow.
around the town.
That's a lap there, yeah.
Yeah, that is. And then at 6 o'clock, because you've worn off all this stuff, you need to go to the hangar, and they're having the extra virgin olive oil tasting there as
ah,
well.
Okay.
I think there's a $5 charge for that one in a no-host bar. And then at 6:30, it's World Quest.
The
everybody's
JWAC
favorite.
World yes. Quest, yes.
Yeah, and you can get tickets, I think, by calling the any World Affairs Council board member or going onto their website. I suppose you can get them at the door. But since it's dinner, you'd think you'd want to get that a little ahead of time.
Yeah,
make sure
so
you're
figure that
be able
one
to
out. Yeah. But that's happening. The World Quest, General World Affairs Council World Quest happening. Centennial Hall is where it's happening.
6:30. And also at 6:30 and also at 8, the fireside lecture out at the Mendenhall Visitor Center is about soil.
Well, It's beneath us all.
Yes. So
hopefully.
They have it.
You don't want it over you.
Yes.
No.
Not yet. So, and then it's 7 o'clock. Greg Cheney's film, Journey on the Wild Coast, is the feature for the UAS Sound and Motion Lecture at Egan Lecture Hall. That's free, and you mentioned the Jump Festival. Thunder Mountain Drama Department opens Much Ado About Will.
Fun. Okay.
Yeah, so it's running this weekend and next weekend. The Juno Douglas High School is doing Kiss Me, Kate, mm-hmm. which is also based on Taming of the Shrew. So if you buy tickets to both of them, there's a package deal. You save money. So look into that. Much Ado About Will opens this weekend. Gold Street Music has Cayenne Blue and a whole bunch of other folks over at the Resurrection Lutheran Church at 7:30.
And that's a really fun series, that Gold Street Music series.
Yeah.
It's just kind of an acoustic thing.
Yeah, it's very cozy.
Right, yeah.
I think it's a $5 charge to get in. But, local folks, but all excellent musicians. 9:30 p.m., you can go to the Rendezvous and sit in with the band with Jason Caputo.
Yes.
So that's an evening for you.
That's all in one night? You're doing all that?
No, I'm stuck in my spot.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. Okay.
I could get out there and you would see me
really on my last thread at about 9 o'clock.
What's
happening on Saturday then?
Saturday, well, you've talked about the Coffee and Collections, which is also a nice series that they do up at the City Museum. It's free, and they'll be talking about the dairy district.
Which is really interesting. And Richard Carstensen is a fascinating person and has done a lot of research on the ecology of that whole district and how it actually was affected by the dairy industry and other things that have happened with it. So, yeah, really fascinating.
A few cows in the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
Changes a few things.
Sure, yeah.
7 p.m., the Juno...
Just one changes a lot.
I don't want to know anymore.
No.
but the milk was good.
Yes.
Yes, and the ice cream was good. Chamber music concert by the Juno String Ensembles. This is the young violinists. They'll be over at Northern Light United Church. This is a fundraiser. This is another group of kids that are hoping to travel to China. Our kids did that. And
that's a wonderful experience.
It is. And
yeah,
these kids are amazing violinists. So check that out. Also at 7 o'clock is the Glacial Erratics. They're doing something again at Resurrection Lutheran Church, singing for Buddy Tabor.
And I wanted to mention as part of that, another thing that's in honor of Buddy Tabor is going to be a special show on KRNN at noon to 2. Hosted by Chris Trostel, and that'll be something where they're remembering all of the great contributions Buddy has made, and also people will be calling in and sharing remembrances of Buddy and
Saturday?
That sort of thing. That is also Saturday. It's Saturday at noon.
Okay, yep. And we should mention that Buddy Tabor is the Lifetime Award winner for the Mayor's Awards for the Arts.
Wow,
which
that's
will
great.
Be
yes, a part of Wearable Arts will be presented on Sunday at Wearable Arts. Yeah.
Yes. So let's see. And on Saturday, you can see Much Ado About Will or Animals Out of Paper again. Sunday is Super Bowl Sunday, so your choices are.
That's just done. A lot of cold cuts and,
and some chips
chicken
and
wings.
Dip,
yeah, right.
Or you can see Much Ado About Will at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
Or you could go to Animals Out of Paper.
You could go to Animals Out of Paper.
Or
that's
you
right.
go skiing.
Yes. Do something productive with your life.
I would like to mention that. In Whitehorse, they sent me down this list of everything going on in Whitehorse.
Mm-hmm.
They have festivals this whole month. It must be how they get through the month.
Right, it's cold up there.
But
yeah.
Starting on Monday is their Available Light Film Festival, and the local filmmaker Corey Mann's film that was it's about fishing, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's going to be part of that festival.
Oh, terrific.
So, yeah. So if you happen to be going up to Whitehorse, just plan to stick around for a bit because
they've
got a lot of stuff going on. Also on Monday, there's a community. Who sing? I'm not exactly sure how to say that. Juno Ekankar is doing that. It's at the downtown library, and it's free. On Wednesday, it's Write for Your Life. And at noon, there's a series of talks that they do over at the Alaska State Museum every Wednesday at noon, Reinvention and Revival, A Narrative of Cake Alaska. So that if you're interested in that, it's Anastasia Tarman Lynch. She's a... historical library.
Well, there
librarian
you go.
Talking about that. There's the KRNN concert series, Endless Explorations.
Yes, and that's George Kuhar and Bridget Cross together. And Nancy, I'm going to have to say
cut
that's
me off.
It.
Okay, 7 o'clock, Mud
for,
Rooms. Okay,
for
bye.
Arts Up, that's Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Thanks so much for listening in to Juno Afternoon this afternoon. And we're going next to All Things Considered.
What we see now is a little bit more assertiveness.